Live at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas. You're listening to the Genghis and Redman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest. Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, their doctors are licensed mechanics. It's Genghis and Ragman.
This is Genghis.
This is Ragman. And we have a special night for you. An evening with a featured artist. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So that's a killer masterpiece theater music.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know how I did.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. I want to say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. English and Russian at the same time.
Starting to feel very British as I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest and bid you adieu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please listen to our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya. Horns up.
Horns up.
You're on live, mano y mano. Genghis was not brave enough to join us today. He was scared. No, I'm kidding. He just couldn't make it. But we have the great, once again, the great E-Rex, better known as Eric Martin from Mr. Big. Eric, how you doing, brother?
What a great name.
I like it, man.
You just said that I thought of that like a long time ago when we did the interview.
Yeah,
character.
Well, we were talking to you. It was at the beginning of the Defying Gravity tour in Houston. We were on the tour bus, and you said, right. Okay, you're Genghis, you're Ragman, I need a name. And we came up with E-Rex. And I wasn't sure if you would remember, we actually titled the podcast with that interview, E-Rex.
You know what? I love it. I love it. I know there were going to be some naysayers out there that are going to go, okay, that is just silly as hell, but I love it. You know what? I got to say that this, I was, right before you called, I was on my Facebook, and, you know, I mean, like, I don't have time to always answer everybody, but today I just kind of started answering people back, but I put this on the side of before, you know, let me start again. I play this thing, this rock opera, like the last 2 or 3 years now, called Avantasia.
Yeah.
I might have told you about that. Yeah, and, you know, in between Mr. Big or my endless Mama Needs a New Pair of Shoes acoustic tour, I do Avantasia. So anyway, this I just did a couple tracks for the Avantasia new album.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the new album's called Moonglow. It's, man, I think it sounds so heavy metal, but they are incredibly heavy metal. And they play this, you know, all over Europe and huge festivals. I mean, 90,000 people. I think there was a place called Wacken. It's just incredible. Anyway, so somebody wrote on Facebook, another voice. Tobias Sammet, who's the creator, you know, the lead guy, another voice, Tobias Sammet, once said that you have soul in your voice. What do you think about that? And I just wrote, that young man can spot talent. Toby's a genius. Anyway, I had to be there. And then the lady is still going, you're absolutely great. He is perfect. I could go on forever with this stuff here, but I just sang a couple tracks on the new album. It's got all these, I don't know, too many folks in the United States know these guys, but they should. It's by Ronnie Atkins. He's the lead singer for a band called Pretty Maids.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, he's so...
This is awesome.
Shit. Anyway, and then Jorn Landy.
Oh, yeah, Jorn's our buddy, singer. Too.
Yep. That was good. I'm glad, man. I'm glad these guys are household names, you know. But these are some of the singers that are that play with Avantasia. Even Jeff Tate has become a new friend now.
Oh, nice.
We played a couple of gigs together, like through with Mr. Big, actually, in South America. But yeah, Jeff Tate's a part of this now. Anyway, and there's so many. This guy Bob Catley for the band Magnum from England. Alder Hartman from Germany, Amanda Somerville from Germany, somewhere in Michigan. Anyway, which is a lot of good people. But anyway, let's get to the interview. Let's go.
Well, you know what? I just, since you mentioned, I was going to touch on the Avantasia stuff. They did a really killer DVD. I think it was filmed at Wacken a few years ago. I know Jorn was on it, and it's been a while since I've watched it. But a lot of the guys, I think, that sang on that record that he was out supporting. Are you planning on, when the new record comes out, if you don't have stuff going on with Mr. Big, flying over and doing some dates with them, or maybe something at Wacken?
Aha! I got something to tell you.
Awesome.
I have played Wacken already with Avantasia a couple of times. There's a box set that from Avantasia that has like a DVD that they play at Wacken and somewhere else as well. Little excerpts from other gigs, but the last DVD that I know, I checked it on YouTube, and it's me up there.
Oh, nice.
Singing. Yeah, I get to sing. I sang a ballad on what a shock. I sang a ballad on the one record is called Mystery of Time, and then they had an interview with a song called Dying for an Angel that Klaus Meine from the Scorpions sang. Can you hear me now?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Klaus Meine from Scorpions he sang it on the record, but I sing it live. And another song called Twisted Mind, where me and Ronnie do a duet. So I've done like 3 years of extensive touring all over Europe and the United States with Aventation. But I just played Wacken with Mr. Big about a month ago. We did a summer tour all over the all over Europe and played, you know, mainly festivals. We played a handful of clubs, and opening was Fozzy, Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
That was really a lot of fun. I'm a huge fan of WWE, and I know that sounds weird, but my 13-year-old son got me into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I told him that I was friends with Chris Jericho, and he was like, that helped me a lot, my connection with my kid here.
There you go. Yeah, you wonder if, and I do, it's kind of funny with my daughter's 15, where I take her on some interviews with me, and, we just met, I met Doug Aldrich for the first time here a couple weeks ago, and I'm a huge fan of his guitar playing, and it's just like,
Really?
Well, when she was younger, it was like a cool thing, but now it's like, okay, whatever. Just interviewed, I don't know if you know who Gus G is.
Of course.
Him and Vinnie Mortis played Houston. And, oh, man, they were amazing. And it was kind of that, like, oh, he was kind of cute, but I don't know.
My son, he's probably, he was into rock and roll, obviously, when he was a little kid. I was so happy that he'd come to shows and have his little laminate. I have two boys, twins, Jacob and Dylan, and they used to have, I probably told you this before, but they used to have their laminate, and, can we go anywhere we want to in this arena?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure, anywhere you want to. Can we go to every bathroom? Yeah, sure, with your laminate. They were totally into the rock and roll scene for a long time, and they still have Mr. Big and their iTunes and all that stuff, or their little iPad or pod or whatever they call it now. But they're more into basketball and sports and that stuff. But my son Dylan, we've gone to WWE events. And we met all the fighters, and it's killer. In fact, when you go to one of their shows, it's like, if you haven't seen Metallica, kind of like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really crazy. I'm not a posturing, but man, there's some really good fighting going on. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. I will have to say, I think the person she met, she was going to meet you, but she was sick. Chips Enough was like super, super just really nice to her. And that's like one of her favorite rock stars right now is Chips Enough.
You can't get too close to Chips Enough or you get a contact high.
I know. She's like, he kind of smelled funny. So, yeah.
Yes, we are. Get back now.
And then he looks at me and goes, hey, look me up in 20 years. I'm like, oh, hey, hold on, Chip. Let's calm down now.
Your kid's the greatest.
No, he's a trip. He's a trip. So, okay. So we have digressed from even talking. But tell me what's going on with Mr. Big. And Genghis is both our condolences about Pat. We were both so sorry to hear about that. And I wanted to talk to you about the live DVD you guys did from Milan. But we want to give it some time. And I know you and Pat were super close. So our condolences, man. But
I tell you. Thank you. I mean, but it's not a day that goes by that I just don't think about this guy. I mean, when I just did this summer tour with Mr. Big, and we did tour. You got to remember that, when Pat was sick with Parkinson's, we hired this guy Matt Starr to play with us, as well. Pat was on the tour as well. He had a little cocktail kit, a percussion kit. It was on the side of the drums, and Pat would come out and play. In the beginning, he played 7 or 8 songs, and then we started getting a little weaker over the years. He he was just down one or two, but he was just playing the percussion and singing like a champ.
Oh yeah.
And believe it or not, yeah. And then even when we at the end, sometimes in an encore, we would change instruments, and I would play bass, Paul would play drums, Billy would play guitar, and Pat would be running around the stage singing, you know, Judas Priest songs and stuff that we'd come up with. Yeah, but he'd be running around, I'm like, dude. I used to make a joke at Ben, you know, I go, are you sure you're sick? You know, I'd go, mm-hmm. Hey, my legs work. But, yeah, it was really difficult when he passed because I wasn't really ready for it. I knew he was going downhill. I knew that, like, even on our last tour that ended in November of last year, last couple weeks, he just was saying, "I just want to go home." I mean, he was a trooper.
Mm-hmm.
He was great on stage and everything, but I could say that it was taking its toll on him because he was just getting weak and yeah, just wanted to go home to see his wife, you know, Karen. They'd been married for over 20 years, and his son Patrick Jr. He just wanted to go home. I totally understand that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, but yeah, it was kind of shocked to me when he passed. And okay, I've already said this, but yeah, when we went on this last tour with just Matt Starr, we had some contracts. We already signed contracts. We already had an Australian tour booked with Extreme, and we already had a summer tour booked, and we did it, and it was super difficult to look back, and I always rely on Pat to count everything with the timing. And I never knew where the one was when we play like Green Tinted Sixties Mind or Colorado Bulldog. There's a couple of those songs that were like, I'm not saying like Rush, but for me, you know, I'm just, even though I got some soul, I'm a white boy from Long Island. I can't dance, you know. So I'm looking back at Pat, and he wasn't there, and you know, I mean, I dealt with it. But I felt so weird being on stage without him from these last gigs. But anyway, I don't know. The future of Mr. Big is it's kind of on hold. We may be doing something next year in the summer, around June and July. This could be it. Believe it or not, this could be like the last hurrah, and we don't know what's going on. I mean, me and Billy and Paul want to keep the door open just we're going to keep the door open. That's all I can say right now.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of ran its course, and it's not that it ran its course. I would love to keep going, but gigantic hole on the stage where Pat Torpy was, and I don't care who we get to play drums or whatever, it just doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, if you think about Zeppelin, I mean, when John Bonham passed, and you know, they were kind of done. I was, you know, the fan in me wants you guys to stick around. I guess just like fans wanted Zeppelin to stick around, but if it didn't feel right, you know, I totally get it. I know last time we spoke at the beginning of the Defying Gravity tour, it was, hey man, I'm ready to rock. Let's get this tour done and keep this thing rolling. You know, everybody's got side projects. I want to keep this thing rolling.
That was always, you know, I don't know the right adjective or cool saying, but contrary to popular belief from Mr. Big fans or whatever, that I don't know who said it in our band or whatever, our management, that like, yeah, we got to knock it off because, you know, Eric needs to take a break. I never wanted to take a break. I, you know, I have, you know, the wife and I have the children and all that, but they know that this is my passion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I like being out on the road. It's a lot better than just sitting in the studio making records. I didn't really care for that part, especially in the last Defying Gravity album. It lasted for 6 days. I didn't even have a... I don't even think I changed my shoes. Anyway, my hat and shoes, that's what I meant. Yeah, I like being out on the road, but like I said, you know, Billy, Pat, Eric, and Paul, you know, that's what I loved, you know. It's uncomfortable doing it. People kind of, you know, it's like when Journey did it and, you know, Van Halen did it and all that stuff, but, you know, having a death in the family is a whole new ball game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. I agree 100%. Looking back at Defying Gravity now, when we talked about it previously, it was so fast. You were kind of taken by surprise. You were working hard to get some ideas and stuff together. Now that you've had it under your belt for over a year, do you look back at that record as, wow, that what we did in 6 days was pretty amazing? Or I got to tell you, I really love the record. I think it's a really, really strong record. And it doesn't sound rushed, but it's amazing that it all came together so quickly. Well, what are your thoughts kind of on Defying Gravity at this point?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, like, I was watching something. I really never saw that. They had, like, some video footage of the making of the record. And I watched it, and I watched my portion of it, and I'm like, I look like I'm in a panic. Because... You know, I think I sang my first song, and the guy already had a video in my face. He goes, "Hey, how's it going making this record?" And I go, "I don't think he had this on the video. I think maybe he took this out." But I go, "I don't know. Ask me in 5 days." I think I said, right? But when I watched some of it, I was watching Billy and Pat and Paul talking, and those guys. We've been in the studio for so many years and have, you know, worked really closely together and writing and the recording process and all that. They're really good at what they do. Maybe it didn't seem like it took 6 days to you or anything. I mean, to them, they were like, they enjoyed the process. I didn't like the process because I like the, you know, I like spending some time with it and going, you know, chopping the song up a little bit, like, we don't need this, we don't need that, to get this little race car going, you know. But looking back on it, when I performed all these songs live, like even that 1992 that I didn't care for, actually, it was great live.
Yeah, it did come off well.
And when I went back and listened to it, I go, this not that bad. It's pretty good. And, the song Everybody Needs a Little Trouble, it's kind of dark on the record, but it was kind of cool, very dark and bluesy. I liked it more than I did like it before, and that's about as far as I'm gonna go.
Well, I gotta tell you that one of the songs that stood out to me I tell all the artists I talk to, we have something called Outdoor Jams. It's an iPod where it's like everybody in the family can enjoy every song that comes on this thing. So it's full of like classic rock, Humble Pie, Peter Frampton, up to Mr. Big, Judas Priest, whoever, you know, anything rock really. And I put Forever and Back on there. And my daughter starts singing the chorus at the top of her lungs. Sounds great. And just love that song. I love that song, too. That one, for some reason, has just really stuck with me. It's just a very catchy, passionate, you have lots of soul in your voice, sir.
Well, you're a genius.
I'm just a simple man doing the best I can, driving a car I can't afford. Born with a losing hand, don't have a master plan, trying to do right by the Lord. I am the beast, you're the beauty. Do you still have feelings for me? I know that I said some quite stupid things, and if I only could take the words back, back. You say that you love me.
well, that's cool. I mean, that was a tongue twister to sing in the verses.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I'm just a simple man doing the best I can, driving a car I can't afford, you know?
Yeah.
And it was crazy to go. But I actually do love that. It was a quirky kind of song.
Yeah,
but,
very.
And the chorus was very 80s kind of bit. If I had a beer, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
In my hand, I was standing on the top of a mountain, and I was shouting out, you know, something like that.
Uh-huh.
The Alps. No, that was a good song. I think your daughter's got it right.
Yeah, I think she does too. Yeah, we get in the car and we get in the iPod and she goes, put on a bop. I don't know what BOP stands for, but it's basically a song that you know all the chorus, the big chorus and stuff, and you sing well in the car. So that's a bop, according to my daughter.
That's a bop? First of all.
That is a bop.
I remember years ago we had a record that said, tell us that some of our songs weren't that great, and he gave us a song, and we were like, what's this? And I remember Billy saying to the guy, going, man, you can't pick a hit. You know, I think we got in trouble for that, but I'm thinking your daughter should have been A&R for the record company. That would have been good.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think so. She definitely has an ear for it.
Hey, first of all, she can call it what she wants to. Bop, a real bop, whatever that means. You know, she's got a pulse on the street for the young generation, young kids. I'm all for it.
Well, that would be hilarious. She's in the room with you. She's 15 years old looking at you, Billy, Pat at the time, and Paul's like, okay, here's your bop. You're probably looking at, what? What are you talking about, kid?
I love it.
Well, I really like Defying Gravity. It is one that has really... It started off a little slower on me because it is a little bit raw, but, man, it's really grown on me. I think there's some really good songs. And bringing up the live DVD and CD you guys did with Live from Milan, y'all played quite a bit from Defying Gravity.
We did. I mean, I think we played maybe four or five songs. Trouble, Defying Gravity, Down on the Love Again. I don't know if Live from Back is on there, but we did play it on tour.
I don't think it's on the DVD. No. I watched
maybe
it the other night.
Maybe it sucked.
they took it off.
No, man. I listened to I watched that thing, and I listened to it, to Live in Milan, and that was another one where we played, like, you know, four gigs in a row or something, and that was the last of the four. Super hot in there. Sorry for using the super adjective. I'm going to Europe, and they say that a lot. Anyway, so it was boiling hot in there, and it was been on the outskirts of Milan. And I remember rocking out doing that gig, and then watching it back and listening to it. And they, look, man, there's no fixes, no nothing. So you can hear. And when I say fixes, a lot of people go in and they get the queen harmonies and everything's so perfect. Yeah, that's pulling the wool over the fan's eyes. That doesn't happen in the Mr. Big Show. So you'll hear all the bells and whistles and all the velvet curtains, but then you're going to see the stars. And there's a couple times that one song, Open Your Eyes, which is on the record, song that Paul wrote, kind of this cool kind of riff, Montrose-y kind of rock song, and right in the beginning of the tune, Paul wrote it, and he's way on the other side of the stage, and I'm looking for the microphone because my guitar tech, Jeff Mallard, or my other drum tech, Ange Dunleavy, he's at my microphone stand, and I'm looking for it on the stage, and I'm looking for it, and I finally grab it, and I can't remember the words, and I'm looking at Billy just for a second, and he goes, you're on your own. And I kind of messed up that first couple words. It's either that song or one of them, or shoot. I have to look at the audience all the time and how people mouth the words so I can remember my own lyrics on most of it.
Anyway, you told us one time, when you see a band, an older band especially, and they're not singing the high part in a song, they're trying to get the audience to do it because they can't do it anymore. But it's kind of interesting, too, if you get up there and you just kind of space on a lyric, you're like, okay, let them sing it, and then I don't remember what I'm supposed to sing.
You can only do that little shtick once. If you do it throughout the whole gig, you really shouldn't be up there on stage anymore, you know?
Oh, I agree.
I mean, no offense to any of the rockers that do it, but even the big famous guys, you know? I mean, I'm not going to mention the names, but they're not kind of hip to... Your fans have already got that down, you know? It looked pretty cool when they held out the microphone. Come on, you do it! And that was cool once or twice over the years, but... You keep doing it, I might say to the audience that, oh, man, this guy can't do it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like I'm outing people, but I do something with myself. But when my last show with Mr. Big, it was in England, and the festival was called Blood Rock. I know it's kind of Blood Rock. I'm like something out of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
There you go.
But, it's a great festival, and I always just tell the guys in the band, I wish that we wouldn't play To Be With You at the end of the set, because I'm always out of breath, and there's a couple high notes I really need to hit, and they go, no, man, we gotta stick it in, our hit should be in the end, just like our record. I'm like, man, that was, 30 years ago. Anyway, yeah, man, I watched this video, and I'm doing it. I'm doing the shtick, and it's not shtick. It's me going, out of breath. And the crowd kind of didn't do it back. And I looked at Billy, who's always, the voice of reason, and kind of gives me the stink eye when I screw up. He's like, dude, you better get it together,
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, anyway, that's... It happens to the best of us.
Well, I want to tell you something. I've had some time to throw in some music videos over the weekend, where I watched yours, and I got to say, from watching it, it didn't look like there was any touch up or anything like that. And then there was a newer progressive band I really like. I don't know. If, I don't want. Huh, whatever. The band's called DGM. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
What'd you say?
DGM.
No.
They're kind of like a Dream Theater, Italian Dream Theater kind of. Really, really. I mean, the vocalist is really good. The guitar player is amazing. But I'm watching the video, and there's backing vocals, but there's no one singing. And then last night, I put in the ARW, Anderson, Rabin, and Wakeman.
Okay.
And, again, beautiful DVD, but it's so funny because I saw this tour. It's like in a theater, and it's like an older crowd, and everybody's sitting down, and there's clapping. A couple guys are standing up, but they're playing like a song like Lift Me Up or something like that, and then all of a sudden, here's... And then they show the audience, and everybody's just sitting down, not even clapping.
Oh, I know, dude. I totally... This is like... This is my worst... it's not my worst nightmare. This is like something I was going to... No, that's not what I wanted to say. I wanted to say, there are gigs that are, they're full, full gigs are great, but when I look in the audience sometimes and I see people with their cameras in their left hand, or, cell phone cameras, and a beer in the other, nobody's clapping. That always totally pisses me off. And it's a DVD. What? I don't give it, And so you're not going to hear any audience, participation or whatever, and that's how some of that live in Milan is.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of, I would say the first couple rows, there was a lot of musicians, and they're filming like Paul Gilbert's pedals or his hands or whatever,
Uh-huh.
Everybody's clapping. So you hear that I'm glad you kind of pointed it out, because look, it's real. There's no like,
you know, like it's Budokan or something, you know. It was this great rock and roll show, kind of sweaty and, you know, all the, you know, us in the flesh, all earthy and organic-like, but in our some parts, you know, the end of it, thank you, for Casimila, and it's like, clappity clip clap clap clappity clap, you know, like in the back, because all the people in the front got cameras and I don't know what they drink, you know. What do they have, like a glass of wine?
I don't know. Maybe a Bellini.
Not so. I always wanted to do something where, remember that, it was like one of the first video games, it was called In Television.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you would and it was like a baseball game, and you would slip this cover over your remote control.
Uh-huh.
And it would go like this, you're out, you know, and it had this like really canned audience.
Oh, yeah.
I always wanted to stick that in when shit like that happens. Anyway, no, it's you're right about being raw. You know, the Defying Gravity album and this live album. It's what it is.
Oh, yeah, it totally comes off. It is funny how you mentioned that the guys are like, oh, last song, you know, that's going to be the hit. And typically that's what you're going to see when you see a band. But you guys did Defying Gravity as your last song in this set on this Milan DVD, which I was like,
right.
Wow, that's surprising. You know, unless it's just huge in Milan and they loved the actual title track. I was surprised a little bit.
Yeah.
Another thing I did want to ask you, though, and I think it's in Just Take My Heart. You're wearing, I guess, the earpieces, and I want to kind of ask you a little bit about that, because I noticed actually Paul's not wearing his headphones anymore. But you took your earpiece out of your, I think, your left ear, and you just started singing. I don't think you put it back in the rest of the show from watching the DVD. But are those to help you hear more of what's going on or hear yourself, or What do those actually do for you?
I'm glad you asked that. Okay, yeah, they're called Ultimate Ears. And for me personally, you know, everybody else has got different mixes. Me, I got you know, a little bit of bass in there, not much, because Billy's pretty, you know, he's like a jet engine on stage, so I don't really need him too much in my head. That's what you call it, you know, in my head. And I got a little guitar, and I used to have Pat, sometimes, you know, whoever playing the drums here,
a little snare, a little hi-hat, and a little kick. And then all their vocals are hot in my head. And then I have me, a little above that, but not bathed in reverb, but it definitely has, when you're listening to some live concert or something on a record, you hear that sort of reverb. Maybe it's an 80s thing or something, but I like it to feel like a concert in my head,
Oh, nice.
A little bit more reverb than it is out in the house. But when I take out the left one to listen, I sometimes I have that one mix in my head, but then I take out the left one sort of to balance it out to hear, am I flat? I need to hear more guitar, more bass, and obviously when you take that, the really great state-of-the-art, that mix is in my head, and I don't hear anything else. So I took out the left one just so I can hear the music a little louder. And it just kind of balances it out for me. I don't know if it's but that's the way I do it.
Oh, no, I was just kind of curious. Actually, when I'm air singing in the car or karaoke in the car with bands, I'll put my finger in my right ear to make sure I'm hitting the note, not that anybody gives a shit about myself, I guess, at that point. But
right. That's funny, though. You're performing for the people in the car. That's fantastic. Years ago, we toured with Aerosmith and Steven Tyler. He always used to do that. He'd put his finger in his ear, and even he'd come to our dressing room, and we would we already finished the show, and Steven and either Brad or Tom used to come in the dressing room and sing with us, sort of do a warm up before they went out on the stage themselves.
Oh,
and
nice!
It was just so funny to see Tyler with his finger in his ear, singing away, and we're usually play Beatles songs. But anyway, you gotta see. For me, I'm so used to it, but when I do, I have to take it out to see if I'm a little flat or not. This is, me.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. Well, based on what you said with Mr. Big, you think that you may be coming towards the end of the line, maybe some more live shows. Do you think you guys will ever do another record, or is that kind of just not something you're even discussing?
It's on the table. I said in an interview in the last month that every year around the I would say, the fall, or right before we're going to possibly do a record, I get together with my partner, songwriting partner, Andre Pessis, who's been with me for almost 20 years. We've written a lot of things together for Mr. Big as well as other people, but we always sit in a room and kind of hash out some stuff. I'll get some recording from Paul, and he goes, hey, what do you think of this idea? And then me and Andre worked on it. So I said in the interview that I'm getting a little a jump ahead of the of the project, because I don't want to be caught with my pants down like when we get the kind of gravity. Oh, yeah. I probably write about 5, 7, 10 maybe songs for the band to listen to, and they'll go, this one's cool, this one doesn't kill me, but, I have some meat on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that Divine Gravity album, which, it's not a jealousy thing, it's just I want to bring something to the table for everybody so we can balance the record out. But I didn't have much. I only had two or three songs. So I'm just trying to get to the drawing board a little earlier. So I have something in my bag of tricks for the band.
There you go.
If we get to make a record.
Well, what are your plans? Is it? I know you're about to go on tour for a while over in Europe, and that's kind of your acoustic thing, right?
Yeah, I built up kind of. It's a Mr. Big following, but it's gone beyond that now. I've done it 3 or 4 years now,
mm-hmm.
And I'll have, you know, these guitar players from Europe and the UK come up and play with me. This guy that I've been playing with for the last couple of years, his name is David Cotterill. C-O-T-T-E-R-I-L-L. How about that?
Oh,
and,
there you go.
Like, and every time I say his name, he goes, no, it's Cotterill. I go, yes, no. I go, Cotterill. And he goes, no, no, Mike, it's Cotterill, you know, or something. I go, okay, Holmes. Get me my violin. Anyway, so, yeah, him and I play together. We've been doing Europe, UK, Ireland, you know, a little bit for 2 or 3 years. Before that, a guy named Marcus Silva playing with me. We went to India and all this stuff. Yeah, I got a kind of my own following now, and it's a lot of fun. It's and I'm out there for a long time, driving around in a little tiny, you know, what do they call them, Citroën or whatever.
I think that's what they are.
European, like a Fiat or some old ass Mercedes Benz, like the old kind. Yeah. And yeah, me and a guy and maybe a promoter would be a sound guy, and we'd drive around Europe for about 5-10 hours a day and then play shows. I'm gonna be there for about 6 weeks. I love it.
Oh, that's nice, man.
Oh man, I love it. And it gets my chops up for Mr. Big and any other, or Aventasia, actually. I'm going to be doing that, I think, in March till the beginning of June. I'm going to go on this world tour with Aventasia. So,
oh, wow. That, do you think that'll make it to the States? Or?
Well, we played L.A. and New York City, I want to say 2015 or 16, but yeah, I think so. I think he's shooting for that.
Oh, that would be killer, man. I'd love to see that. As far as...
Go ahead. Daughters and say, this is Bob.
That's not a Bob, Dad. What, have you thought about maybe doing another solo record, or is that something that... it sounds like you've got a lot on your plate, so I don't know if that's something you've been thinking about.
I think I put a lot of stuff on my plate, so I don't have to think about it. Yeah, you know, I've been threatening to make this damn solo album for 12 years, man. I haven't had anything out. Even, I mean, I got some diehard fans looking at me going, dude, you know, blank or get off the pot, you know, whatever it is. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at my computer right now with my idea selection, and it's like decades of tunes, like a decade of tunes that I could be recording. But I don't know. That's kind of it's like a fear factor now. I'm right in the middle. I'm in the Middle Ages. Between life, I'm between life and death. You know, I don't know yet. I don't know. I got to either blank or get off the pot or never do it again. Never even think about it.
Yeah, don't even mention it.
Yeah.
Well, can you say if you did, do you know what direction you would go in? I know some of the stuff I've seen, I guess you did in Japan, was a little bit more, AOR-ish, a little bit softer than what we're used to hearing from you. So I didn't know if that was a direction you would look to do, or if you would be more Mr. Biggie, more bluesy, or kind of what your thoughts would be.
Yeah, that's the dilemma. You know, would it be like three sides to every story? You know, would it be like, you know, like the rock portion of it, a blues portion, or kind of a mellow acoustic thing? I don't know. I'd say I've been thinking about that for years. Well, what am I going to do? I don't know how to do it. I don't know.
Well, if you need help, Genghis and Ragman will be there to help you, sir.
Right on, brother.
You do remember we are the guys that got Mr. Big back together. You told Billy that last time we saw you, so.
Yeah, man. You know, if it wasn't for you and your partner in crime, I don't think, I go, hey, those guys like it. Well, then that's it.
Shipping those things.
Well, Eric, as always, it's awesome to talk to you, man. Before we let you go, is there a message you would like to tell the fans out there?
I just did an interview for a Belgium newspaper, and they go, do you have any message for the Belgian fans? And I said, you know, I like you. I haven't said anything like, oh, I really like your chocolate. I'm going to get a little bit more prolific than that, you know. Do I have a message? My message is always the same. Thanks, everybody, for keeping my dream alive and keeping the torch burning. I appreciate every Facebook entry, email, coming up, pat me on the head like a little puppy, pat me on the back for like, thanks for entertaining me all these years. And I love what I do. My life is great. I mean, I do step in a couple holes once in a while, trip over my own tongue, but, in the immortal words of Sally Field, you do like me. Oh, my God. I quoted Sally Field. I can't believe it.
That's a first on the Right to Rock.
First of all, she used to go out with Burt Reynolds. That's got to give me some point.
Yeah. And that was the love of his life, according to him.
I'm not according to her.
No, I know. She doesn't have the same story.
She doesn't have the same story, but hey, man, it's I get nothing. I got nothing after that.
Well, yeah, we never knew it would turn into Sally Field and at Reynolds. That's a strange twist here. It was almost like he was kind of stalking her on TV towards, I guess, the end of his life there. It was weird, man.
This is so funny. We're turning something really cool that I just said into like some really dark and twisted sentiment. I know. But God, bringing it back to Pat Torpey, we used to watch these movies on the bus, mm-hmm. and one of them was Deliverance, and it was great, dramatic action movie with some really queer, quirky, dark, and twisted stuff in it, but it was a scene where, you gotta have to be there, it's like a visual that Pat would do, but there was a scene where I think Burt Reynolds, character named, I think it's Drew, and he got shot with a bow and arrow, I believe, and they're kind of they're using like a pulley system down from the mountains, and they're bringing him down into the water, and his arm is all twisted up, and Pat used to put his hand. He could do that. He was like double jointed or something. He could take his whole arm and put it around his neck. All the way down to his left shoulder.
Oh, wow.
And it was creepy, but he goes, and in the movie, he would be like, Drew! Like, panic, like, Drew, are you okay? And Pat would do that all the time. And even when something would go wrong on stage, an amp would fall over, or Eric would fall over, his monitors, this is before in-ears, anyway, and he'd go, Drew! You have to be there. But
that's
funny. I wanted to do it like instead of like our Kevin Bacon moment. It was a Burt Reynolds moment. Okay. God, I hope your fans and my fans can figure this out. My fans are just gonna go, oh yeah, that's Eric Martin. He's a pretty odd character. But your fans, hopefully they get it.
Oh yeah, if you've heard our show, then they'll get it.
Okay.
Well, Eric, like I said, man, awesome talking to you once again. We want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. We want to tell all the fans to go see Eric live in your town, Europe, U.S., wherever, and pick up Mr. Big's last DVD. It's awesome. Live from Milan. Eric, awesome talking to you, brother.
Great talking to you. It's so weird talking to you, just you and not, Genghis, but hey, man. Word to your mother.
Yeah, Genghis, we're going to have to do this again when Genghis can be present. Maybe we can chat with you when you're doing the Avantasia stuff, man, if you have time.
I
I always love talking to you, man. I really do, and I will have a lot to talk about on that tour. That Avantasia tour is huge. The least amount of people is like 10,000 people.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. It's really, really good. I know you like that, you know, listening to you tell me stories about, like, this Italian group and also Trevor Rabin, whatever. You do like a little prog in your coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. And that Avantasia is similar to that. It's kind of metal and prog and pretty cool.
I dig him, man. I like that because Tobias is a great singer too, right?
Yeah.
But then he gets all these other guys. And like you said, Klaus Meine, I just saw the Scorpions. And, man, that guy's 70, and he has not lost a thing. It blows my mind. The Ronnie, I love Ronnie Atkins. That guy, I've always loved Pretty Maids for a long time. So
yeah, great singer. And like, an even better drinker.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah, we're the Toxic Twins on tour. Oh, damn, did I just out myself?
Uh-oh.
Oh, well.
Well, you know, did you ever hear his Nordic Union thing that he did?
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about that.
Sort of inspiring me to do a a solo record. I have been talking to Joel Folster from Whitesnake,
mm-hmm.
And a couple other people. We have written some songs, but
nice.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I forgot to mention that part because I've been putting that solo album on the back burner for a long, long time. That sometimes just forget about all the. There are some irons in the fire, but when I heard that Nordic Union record, oh, it floored me. I love the sound of it. I love the sound. Ronnie Atkins and what's the other guy? Ken Hammer is a guitar player from.
Oh, yeah, Ken's badass.
Those records are state of the art, great metal records, and they have like obviously like this sort of AOR. You know, hooky choruses and stuff, but the record quality, the production, that's what I love, and that's what I'm leaning towards. For you know, granted, only about 5 minutes ago, I was like, I don't know, you know, mellow, blah blah blah. But look at me, man, I'm already inspired now. God damn it!
Well, you know, I just
now
met
I have another thing to do.
I just met Dennis Ward for the first time. I don't know if you know Dennis. From Pink Cream 69, he produces a lot of stuff on Frontiers.
I just met. Yeah, we played some gigs together back in the day. Mr. Big and Green Tinted 69. No,
Pink Cream.
Pink Cream 69. And I was in Germany. He went to breakfast at a hotel, and he was there. And I met that guy. Sorry, I know him. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say he was a really cool dude, and he can actually sing. He's singing with Gus G right now on his little tour he's doing. So how's that? He can produce. He's a good producer. I think he produces all the Pink Cream stuff. The last record they did was very well produced. It's heavier than they had been. It got it kind of polished for a while, but then the last record had a good, nice, heavy sound, almost like a Pretty Maids type thing.
Definitely want to check it out. You know, I'm going to throw something out here. You know, I don't usually. Hey, if I hear a great singer, I'm going to praise him. And I'm just going to throw this guy's name out. I played a gig in Minnesota recently with like I have a kind of another side project band. It's just a lot of fun and just it's gas money and some beer money that kind of thing. It's just Eric Martin from Mr. Big featuring P.J. Farley and Steve Brown from Trickster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the drummer that we have is a guy named Joey Quesada. He played in a band called ZO2 from New York City.
Oh, yeah, I love ZO2. I used to watch the TV show.
I just watched an episode right before you called.
Oh, really?
Oh my God. It's so filthy, but it's funny. It's silly band humor. I just watched because Joey puts him up on his Facebook,
And, oh my God. Anyway, the Eric Martin and the Trickster fellas, we played this gig, Rocktember, just recently, in Hinckley, Minnesota. And Great White, it was like a 3-day festival, and that day was, it was Vane, us, Great White, and Skid Row. And, man, Skid Row, and no offense to any of the singers that they've had, you know, even Tony Harnell, I love his voice, and obviously Sebastian Bach, but the guy that they got now, this guy is ZP Thurt, I think his name is, and he was a singer for a band called Dragon Force Europe, and he is phenomenal. You know, he's a great singer. I haven't heard one in a long time, and there you go. Anyway, I'm throwing that out there. I don't have my horns up. I have more of a sci-fi horns up, more kind of like a Live Long and Prosper.
Oh, there you go.
Right now.
Yeah, I did. I knew that they got a new guy. I was kind of bummed. I wanted to hear him with Tony, because I'm
great.
A huge Tony fan, too.
Me, too.
But, yeah, I didn't realize. I guess it's the guy that sang on the first couple of Dragon Force records.
Well, the ZP Thurt, to me, sounds more like, well, he's got his own thing, but he's got the edge of Sebastian Bach, and that's what the fans want. Tony is an awesome singer. I don't think Skid Row fits him. That's how I look at it. He's a unique, he's a great singer. You know, we played that Rocktember last year, and or the year before, I don't remember, but Tony was the singer for Skid Row. And I heard it, and I was like, oh, that's good. And then when I was hearing 18 in Life, I was... Tony's just a little, he's got edge, but he's a little too clean for that tune. Hey, man, I started off praising Tony Harnell, and I'm going to stay with it. I think Tony Harnell's a great singer, but this kid fits. And
And they went for a much heavier sound, too. And I agree with you. Tony's voice is, it can be aggressive, but it's not that aggressive with something like Skid Row.
No, it's like a heavy rock Steve Perry.
Yeah.
But this ZP Thurt, and again, I keep saying there's no offense, but no offense to Sebastian Bach, but you don't even think about him when you go to see Skid Row now.
Oh, wow. I definitely need to check it out. I don't know if they've put out anything since he's been in the band, but I think they're coming to Houston here in the near term, so
yeah,
might have to go check them out.
You would dig it. You are going to... Your tongue's going to come out of your mouth and boom out like a red carpet. He's really, really good.
Nice. I can I ask you one more question? I know we're running a little bit long here.
I'm just going to be editing this.
Well, I got a question because I want to tell you a little story, if you don't mind. I was with the family in Milan last year, and Megadeth was playing in town. And I was like, oh, man, that'd be kind of cool to go check out Megadeth. But, oh, well, I'm with the family. My folks were with us. We kind of did the European vacation, the family truckster, and you drove around Europe and stuff like that. So, anyway, we get up our first day. We flew in, whatever. You get first day for breakfast, we get up, and I see this guy eating. I'm like, holy shit, I think that's Dave Elphinstone over there, the bass player.
Yeah.
I was like, do I go talk to him? I was like, when am I ever going to meet this guy again? And I said, oh, well, whatever. My daughter's looking at me like, Dad, are you going to bother that guy? I was like, he's either going to tell me to go screw off or he's going to be friendly. Let's just see what he does. So go over to him, say hello. Super nice. Set up, get his information so we can do an interview, which we ended up doing later on, and got a picture with him and all that. So anyway, we go back up, and I'm like, we're getting ready. My wife's getting ready. My mom's getting ready. My dad, all that. And my daughter and I was like, chomp at the bit. Like, dude, Mustaine's down there. We had interviewed Kiko Larejo. I don't know if you know Kiko.
I do.
And I said, well, at least, if I saw Kiko, I'd say hello again, blah, blah, blah. So we go down. Sure enough, dude, it's the drummer guy, Kiko, and then Mustaine's over there in the little buffet line getting food. I'm like, dude, this is awesome. So go say hello to Kiko. Had to remind him, you know, he does a ton of interviews. So I was like, hey, we interviewed you in Houston this one time. He was real cool, took pictures. And I said, hey, you think it's cool to approach Mustaine? And he looks like he's in a really shitty mood because you can just look at his face. He looked like he just hated the world. So I said, Kiko, do you think it's cool? He goes, good luck, man. So I go over there and I say, Dave. He walks right by me. Mr. Mustaine keeps on walking. Dave, can I get a picture with you real quick? Just ignores me the whole time. So I said, you know what? Okay, whatever. Maybe he's having a bad day. And so I go back. I talk to Kiko. I said, I think he's having a bad day. And then Dave comes over to the table and slams his tray down. And I was like, well, I guess I'm not welcome here. So I walked off. And then, sure enough, the next morning we saw him again with the tour manager. I was wearing a Saxon shirt. I was like, okay, well, maybe he'll say, hey, I was having a bad day. You want a picture, whatever? Would not acknowledge my presence. My daughter walks up to the omelet station. He looks at her. He goes, yeah, it looks pretty good. And that was the only words he said to us. So, my question for you is not to bang on Mustaine, because I already did that a couple episodes ago, but etiquette.
Okay, well, you can't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
I don't know Dave Mustaine at all. Now, don't even admit. I mean, I think I watched him in some kind of monster video or movie, you know, the Metallica movie. Is that, mm-hmm. That's what it's called?
Yeah, some kind of monster.
Avantasia's played some festivals with Megadeth. Dave Ellison, you know, always a nice guy. Every time you meet him, you know, down to earth. I'm not going out of my way to meet people that I got a feeling like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I catch somebody on a bad day, or like, even when your friend Kiko said, you know, good luck, and me personally, I'm not that way at all. I mean, I can be moody, and I can be, you know, there's a lot of things going on in my mind, but I never do that with fans, and people know that. I don't know, like a couple, probably Dave, I mean, yeah, Dave Mustaine probably listened to this and go, oh, that guy's a pussy. if I'm having a shitty day, I may kind of give you a look like, not now, but, you know, I'm going to explain it to you.
Yeah.
But no. Etiquette. It's not etiquette. It's just like human nature. Somebody's coming over who's a fan. I go, I just want to tell you that, you know, you inspired me, or I really like it. Like, or coming over and say, hey, man, good luck tonight. Break a leg. I'll do a great show. That's what you're kind of expecting when somebody comes over. Say if you're in a hotel situation. I don't know. If he's eating, it's kind of hit or miss.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't matter who it is.
He was actually in the buffet line, and I figured, you know, if I could just say hello and, hey, a big fan, can I get a real quick picture? That's all. I wasn't going to try to interview him or anything like that.
Hey, okay, etiquette, buffet line. Okay, we're going to award for the plaintiff, or no, I don't know what to say. Yeah, you're right. He's wrong. But it's hit or miss, you know. You gotta kind of go on somebody's reputation as, you know, he always seemed like a stone faced killer to me.
Yeah.
You know, and but I don't know. I mean, I went to see. This kind of happened to me a couple times. I was in an airplane once, and I love Alan Alda from Mass, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's in one of my favorite movies. Believe it or not, it's called. Same Time Next Year. It was a Neil Simon play where him and his woman, Ellen Bernstein, meet every year. They're married to other people. They meet every year in this one cool cottage in Monterey, and it's really funny and poignant. It's just really, but it's, you know, a love story. But anyway, Alan Alda, I'm on an airplane, and he's reading a book, and there's hardly anybody on this flight. It's late at night. I go, how do
want a picture. I didn't have a camera. I didn't know cell phone cameras, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I just want to tell you that I love your acting, and I mean, barely got it out. And he goes, and I noticed, because I just noticed things, that he's at the end of the book. So I kind of went, ooh, good, I'm not going to hit a snag here. I might be able to get, you know, like, hey, man, hey, buddy, how you doing? And he's at the end of the book, man. And he puts his bookmark. I said, like, there's two pages left, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I barely get it. I go, Alan. And he's like, hey, dude, can't you see I'm reading? Hey, I don't want to be bothered, okay? And
wow.
And I still love the guy. But, you know, that hour, I was like, I almost had tears in my eyes. I was still taken back, you know?
Yeah,
And then I met Eric Clapton in Japan. He had played a show, and, you know, our promoter, this guy, Mr. Udo, famous promoter, he, you know, Eric Clapton doesn't know me, but he knows Mr. Udo. He's been working with him for over 30, 40 years, and Mr. Udo comes up. I'm a new artist, too. I'm in Mr. Big, but it's my first tour.
Mm-hmm.
This was like 89 or 90. And he puts his arm around Eric and puts around me and he goes, let's take a picture of my two favorite Erics, right? And I'm beaming, man. I'm beaming. I'm, you know, it's like the Irish Spring commercial or so, or whatever the commercial is. Like, my feet are 10 feet off the floor, right?
Uh-huh.
So, and then we take the picture and Eric goes, who are you, mate? Like, kind of like his act. I thought he was going to be more aristocratic English, but he's like, I'm Mary Poppins. No, he wasn't that. But he goes, yeah, who are you? And I go, I was crumbling. I don't know what to say. I was out of breath. You know,
uh-huh.
I just ran a mile. But I go, my name is Eric Warren. I play in a band called Mr. Big. And I go, oh, he's my guitar player, Paul Gilbert. He comes over and he goes, uh-huh. And he kind of doesn't want to give us the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the Armani suit rocking, and he's got his hands in his pocket, and he's like, looking at his watch, like waiting for the limo to come and pick him up. It was hard. And then all of a sudden, I said something funny or something. He's like, hey, you guys are the one with the drills. And I go, yeah, that's right. We're silly like that.
We're silly like that. Sound like the Journey Boys.
Yeah, well, they're silly like that. So, and then he let his hair down. He was cool. But I think when I was watching him on stage at the end of White Room, he couldn't hear himself on monitors, so he let that stick in his head. And so when he was backstage, he was kind of pissed at that. And then I just came over, Eric Clapton, man, you are the greatest. And he didn't want to hear it. And then he's a professional, man, and he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He just snapped out of it and went, hey, you guys are on the drill. Hey, well, you know, and he talked for us for a minute, and I totally pulled a fanboy. I go, got any picks? And he reached in his pocket, and he had a bunch of red EC's back picks.
Oh, wow.
I'm a child of the 70s, man.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you poured them all in my hand, and I still have them.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. So I want to say that you caught Dave Mustaine on a bad day. You know, I want to give the guy a benefit of the doubt. I hear another story about Dave Mustaine that is similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on my hit list. Any more words of Chris Jericho? All right.
You know, when I interviewed Elson, I told Elson a little bit about it, and he put it in perspective. I mean, I'm still a fan. Megadeth's got great music, and he goes, dude, when we're overseas, it's almost like we're in a utopia, if we're in a hotel or something like that. We don't really expect a lot of guys to come up to and talk to us. And he goes, it's kind of our private time. So, yeah, he goes, certain people are certain ways with it, but I think he enjoys his privacy, especially when we're overseas. So I said, oh, I get it. That's fine.
That does make sense. To me, when I'm overseas, it doesn't matter if it's a European at all, either.
But it's in a, like, this is another time. This is said that this one time. So if I hear an American voice going, "Hey, hey, man, Eric," I'm like, "What? American?" I go, "Hey, bro, how you doing?" I was in England, and I hear this, "Hey, Eric Martin, what the hell are you doing here?" And I turn to Leonard Hayes from when he was in YNT.
Oh, nice.
The man has passed, and he's a legendary drummer, but he was a grumpy son of a bitch back in the day.
Oh, was he?
And he was a great guy, but kind of like, what are you? And I think he had it out for me a little bit. He was like always picking on me, busting my balls. Kind of taught me how to bust balls. Actually, I got to hand it to him. not my balls, but hand it. You know what I'm talking about. You're following me, right?
Yeah.
He goes, "Hey, Eric, what are you doing here?" I'm like, "God, dude, you're so grumpy." I go, "What? I go, I'm here watching you play at the Monsters of Rock, not Cruise, Monsters of Rock, the original, in Donington, 1994 or something like that." And I go, "I'm here for you, man. I heard you guys are playing. I'm here for you." And he's like, yeah, whatever. And, you know, you catch people on a bad day, a good day, all that. But I can kind of see Dave Mustaine's point. But I don't know, man. You gotta kind of buck it up. You're an entertainer, man. I don't know. But if you ever hear me that I have done it, you have permission to, you know, give me a shiner.
No problem. Well, I guess I don't want to bash anybody else, I guess, but I mean, I could, but I'll tell you, the worst one I ever had is Scotty in from Anthrax, which I thought would be the coolest mofo on the planet. And his wife was playing.
Awesome.
Huh?
Right?
Do what?
I've run into people. Actually, I don't know. I haven't really heard too much about Scotty Ian, but I was going to say I heard, but he appears to be like just a really down earth, cool guy.
Oh, yeah. But in real life, outside of the cameras, the one day, maybe it's a bad, you can chalk it off to a bad day, but his wife was playing in Houston in a record store, doing a little signing, an acoustic set, and it was about her, it wasn't about him, but my daughter really liked his wife's Pearl CD, and she wanted to meet Pearl, so I was like, cool, I'll bring my Anthrax, I'll get Scott to sign it. Maybe I can, you know, ask him if there's a way to set up an interview at some point, whatever. And we got in line, and he was being an asshole. And even his wife, Pearl, called him out. She goes, "Scott, why are you being such an asshole?" He wouldn't do anything for me. He did sign my CD, but wouldn't sign my daughter's cover for the Pearl record. We had to. My daughter was crying in the car, and she didn't get everybody's signature. So we went back in. I don't know. He was just being a total dick that day.
Yeah. Okay. You got to weigh in all the factors. How long have you been married?
Probably a couple, 2 or 3 years at that point. I think. Not that long.
Okay, not that long. So you can't really use the factor that, you know, or who knows? I mean, maybe he was like angry with his wife that day. Maybe they were in a little fight.
Or maybe he didn't like something with the performance or something. I don't know.
That's, you know, that sucks. That when you, you know, like Eric Clapton is one of my idols, and I met him, and he was kind of douchey in the beginning, but then he turned, and he kind of had a look on his face like, "Hey, man, yeah, I would almost like this legend guy, you know, looked up to this guy and kind of went, why am I here? You know, why am I here? How did I get here? Because of you. Thank you." And then it became really cool. So, I don't know. That, you know, you catch people on a good and bad day. I don't know. I've been lucky so far.
I think the thing that bothered me the most is he was kind of rude to my daughter. And at the time, I think she was 8. So.
You know what? Look, they just stay in your head. And I've got to hope nothing ever bad happens to Scott Ian or anything when I say this shit, but you gotta go like this, girl. You're dead. You're dead to me. You're dead.
Well, you know, I, I will say I was a little ass hurt about it for a while. It's like, oh, fuck Anthrax, blah blah blah, and you know, I'm seeing Anthrax and jamming to it. But at first, I kind of hurt the feelings a little bit. And it wasn't because of me, because I justify as well. Hey, spouse, wife's not about Anthrax, and I get it, you know. But being rude to my daughter, that wasn't cool, dude. She's 8 years old. Come on.
Yeah, that was cool. So. Well, on a good note, when I first went to Japan in 1989 to promote the Mr. Big record and to play a couple shows, the first person I met, and one of the nicest guys I ever met on the road, was Joey Belladonna.
Oh, really?
Yep. This is before he got kicked out, and then before he got back in, before they went, holy shit, we got to get him back in the band. This is a long, long time ago. This is like when he was in the band.
Yeah.
And he was great. We met, we went out to, I think we had a bite to eat, you know, got some of that, you know, fish heads and rice or whatever, I forgot what it was. Some eyeball soup.
Yeah.
And had a couple drinks, and we weren't falling all over ourselves, but it was just a really cool night hanging out with Joey Belladonna. I didn't even really know him. I really didn't know that much about Anthrax. I went, who's that guy? He's just like another just very cool singer guy. And I became a fan, and then he was a great guy.
Yeah. He's still got a great voice, too.
Yeah.
I knew you probably got to go, too. We've been going for a while.
Hey man, if you want to slam everybody else, and I'll talk you back.
Okay, I'll give you one more topic.
If you want to slam anybody else, I'll talk you down off that mountain. Yeah, I'll talk you down. Because I'll tell you, that's okay. I kind of get the good out of people, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you, this is my last topic I'll chat with you about today. There was always, back in the day, there was always this, I guess, rivalry between, I guess, for lack of a better term, the hair metal band / you know, glammier, popular music opposed to, like, the thrash metal bands like your Anthraxes, Metallicas, and Slayers. Mm-hmm. But now you come out, you know, 20, 30 years later, and it seems like those bands, it was just for show for the magazines, as how we're tougher than those guys, you know, that type of thing. Because, I mean, like, if you look like Elfson, he's got his label that's got, like, Autograph and all these, like, bands from, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. Was there any real rivalry? It doesn't sound like it. I mean, if you're hanging out with Joey Belladonna, but was that just kind of a press thing to make it, oh, you know, I'm throwing darts at Kip Winger because, you know, he's the sex symbol and all that stuff?
Our band didn't have any rivalry. We just, you know, we were kind of a muso kind of band. You know, we were kind of a heavier Kings, not a heavier Kings X. We were like maybe a melodic. We can't be more melodic than Kings X, but we were kind of like in the Kings X.
Yeah, I get that.
But like, it's so funny hearing, like, back in the day with like the thrash rock metal bands and the glam bands, like, say, Enough's Enough. And Tough, and Pantera was a glam band, remember?
Oh, yeah, I saw them when they were.
bands like Mr. Big or something like that, in that niche. But it reminds me, like, did you ever play Splatterball in high school?
Splatterball? What was that?
Splatterball, okay, well, like, say if it's raining, they would bring all the kids in on the gym court, and they would take the heads, which in the 70s, that was, we call, like, long hair guys. And then they'd take the jocks, and they'd pit each other, and it would be like a dodgeball.
Yeah.
But they'd use a volleyball, and they would have, like, two or three going, and they'd toss them back and forth and basically try to get the guy out or kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, maim him. And it was called Splatterball in high school. That's some evil gym coaches, you know, back in high school.
Sounds like it.
It reminds me of that, you know, putting the rock, rock. I never went for that. it is kind of funny when I play with Aventasia, I'm playing with bands that Mr. Vic doesn't ever tour with, like Slayer and Megadeth, and I mean Priest is like almost a pop band with some of the bands that I play with, you know, mm-hmm. with Avantasia. I mean, pretty. There's some and there's some, you know, growling, dark kind of bands. Every time I introduce myself to some of these guys, they kind of give me this kind of look a little bit like, what are you doing in my camp? And then I go, yeah, I'm looking for the band Mr. Good. And they're like, oh, I love that band. I love that band. You know, I mean, and they, you know, they get past, they go, I'd love to be with you, too. I'm like, you're kidding me. You know, like, which brings me to the point. I always talk about this one thing where I'm on stage at the Hellfest in France, and I'm looking over to Paul Gilbert, and I go, I don't want to play To Be With You. I can't do it. I'm looking at a sea of long hair and black shirts that say, you know, Death Angel and Testament on it. I go, I don't know if that's going to go over. And they go, we got to do it. And we didn't do it that one day. And I got so much shit from it, from the metal community. And it,
wow.
And I'm really good friends with Chuck Billy from Testament. I mean, really good pals. I mean, like, we've known each other for a long, long time.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't go over his house for dinner, but like, there's a respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, this one time, I don't know if he was taking a piss out of me, but he goes, we got to do a record together, like a duet record. And you know what's funny?
Uh-huh.
Which goes to your story, is that I have never felt, like an alienation. Is that the word? Alienated. From these guys, or a separation. I've never felt that way. I always felt like everybody's kind of treating me equal, you know? Maybe other people get it. I'm sure there were days, you know, there were times. I remember, like, even seeing Richard Kotzen at some party in L.A., Jack Nicholson party, and I'm doing a decadent thing going on, and he was in Poison then. And I'm seeing him, and I'm like, wow, what's with the makeup? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, dude, what? And I get to ask you up there and just go away. But, yeah, you're screwing up for me. I'm trying to get over on some girl. Like, I don't know if makeup's going to do it, but all right, kid, do whatever you want to do. All right, you know better than that. But, now that's just joking. I never felt animosity towards any of the rocker guys.
Well, I think you guys had more cred, though, you know? Kind of like King's X has got the cred. They really didn't fit in that hair metal, hair band type mode, but they got looped in there because of, like, a ballad or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Hey, look, I'll tell you, I did get shit from people when they would go, dude, what's with the flame pants? I used to have leather pants for that. Like, I had one with red flames, another leather pants with blue flames, another one green. I was like, dude, what's with the flame pants? But you're right. And they go, man, you look all, you're trying to be all glam rock. I'm like, I know, I am, I know. I just trying to fit in, you know. I've always been a jeans t-shirt guy, so, anyway.
That's funny, man.
Down, she's calling the undertow. Drowning.
Genghis.
And Ragman.
And you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G., who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.